You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, and we're going to cover some more pitfalls to success through in our success through action segment. And in our isms, today is communism. And then for our main topic, we're going to be talking about composting. We talked about that briefly last time, but I want to go into a little bit more detail. Every homestead, and even if you don't have a homestead yet, everybody can compost and you can learn this skill. It's really an art and a science, that's for sure. But you want to talk real quick about what we have going on right now here on why we're so busy?
One of our major projects has been to clean out our downstairs workshop and move it all up in an organized manner into our garage.
So yes, the garage is now the workshop.
It's a workshop. It also has our brooder, and that also acts as our little hospital for any small injured or sick animals or whatever.
And a place where we're going to do starts.
So yep, we're going to do starts there.
It's so multifunctional for sure.
And we're going to hang, a deer or whatever.
Yeah, right. So our garage works really well in the wintertime. It, for whatever reason, it stays right there, about 35 to 45 degrees.
Yeah.
And that works out great for that.
Yeah. So we're doing that and working on reorganizing our office. And also the kids picked a just massive amount of hops.
Yes.
Like six buckets, six large five-gallon buckets of hops.
It's a lot of hops.
It's a lot of hops.
So a lot of beer will be brewing.
Yeah. So
the excess actually can also go to the animals.
Animals, yeah, if we want it to. And so we only have two dehydrators, so we filled those up. We have our second batch dehydrating now. In the meantime,
sun drying the rest.
The rest of them are in this decorative netting stuff that we have kind of spread out and laid out on our deck in the sunshine right now. And we'll be working on continuing to dry those. So
yeah, that's good. All right, yeah. So
plus we have the workshop coming up on Saturday. And so there's a lot of prep for that as well.
Absolutely. So let's get started. Success through action. Today, we're covering more pitfalls and kind of how you can overcome these pitfalls. These are the things that always get in the way. We covered some of these last time, so if you didn't listen to podcast 85, go back and do that. But here are a few more, and I think we wanted to start off by just talking a little bit about getting discouraged and how that can get in the way of us achieving our goals.
Yeah, because sometimes you're going along and it seems like things are going great, and then suddenly a big obstacle that maybe looks insurmountable, or situations create an environment that you feel like you can't continue moving toward your goals. And so it's easy to get discouraged at that point and say, you know what, I just don't think I can do it anymore.
Right. So it's important one of the things is if you have a partner that can help you and encourage you, and that understands everything you're going through, that understands your goals, what you're striving for, and that can help encourage you along the way. This is really important. So even if you don't have that, it's important for you to be that encourager for other people, and in turn they will likely end up doing that for you.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties in with what we talked about last time, is working on being around positive people and people that can help, keep you motivated and keep you moving toward and living out what your values are, so that you can wake up every morning feeling good about your life and yourself.
Yeah, that's very important. We have one on here, lack of focus and concentration. Okay, so I think what we're talking about here is you're so quote unquote busy, but you're not really productive.
Right.
And the reason is because you're not focusing on what's most important. You haven't prioritized, and you're not working on those priorities that will essentially produce the most benefit, or what are the most important things that you need to be working on in order to achieve your goals. You know, yeah. That has to be in the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, and then even when you're doing those activities, to make sure that you're doing them in a very concentrated way. You're not getting distracted by this. You're not taking phone calls. You're not, like, remembering what you need to buy at the store or a shopping list or whatever it may be. But you have a very concentrated, focused time that you're looking at the most important activities and dedicating that time to that particular task.
Right. And so on the flip side, if you do those things, then you can achieve so much more.
Yeah.
You know, by concentrating and focusing on the top priorities.
Yeah.
And so then obviously the assumption there is that you do set priorities. And later, I'm sure we're going to get into those kinds of things, planning and setting and actually setting goals.
Yeah.
We have done podcasts before about setting goals. But I think we're going to be able to go into more detail on that in the future. You know, and it kind of assumes that you have goals. Well, a lot of people don't have goals.
Right.
And in fact, most people do not have written goals.
Right.
I'm not talking about
dreams.
Oh, I have dreams. I have, you know, oh yeah, I want to do this and that and the other thing. That's not a goal unless it's written down with a plan of action in order to meet that.
Right.
It reminds me of the kind of the illustration of the factory. I mean, here we have, you know, a factory. You take an automobile factory, for example, and have the assembly line and you know, all the people go in and they know their jobs and everything else. And the raw material comes in, or actually I should say that whatever the parts come in and they're going to be assembled in this assembly line. And on the other end is going to come out this product. Maybe it's a Ford F-150 with clear specifications, clear quality control. There's a goal there that this factory has. And it was clear all the way through, and everybody's kind of focused on that, and even though they might be just focused on their one part, what comes out the other end is planned. It's there, you know.
And everybody's contributing their part to that particular goal.
Right. And so if we go through our life and we think, you know, I don't like to think of our lives as factories or anything like that, but if, you know, we have lots of capability, we have lots of raw material, we have lots of labor, but if we don't have that end in mind, then we're just going to be like assembling miscellaneous things and nothing really all that great is going to come out the other end.
Right. Well, we could talk about what comes out the other end, but.
Okay. All right. Here's the next one. Here's a pitfall to achieving your goals. Spending time on unimportant tasks.
Yes. Again, I think that goes back to folk knowing what our, not only our goals are, but then understanding what the most important priorities are to accomplish that goal. And I think we talk about, delegating as part of this, so we can look at, well, we have all these tasks to do, but which one do we need to focus on? Understanding what the most important ones are and then looking for ways to delegate or eliminate things that we don't necessarily need.
Yeah, you're talking about the ABCDE model of prioritization. And, you know, you have all, just like you said, you have all these tasks and you set priorities. And a good way to do it, and there's lots of ways to do it. Here's one, using this ABCDE method. And that's just a prioritization system. So you have, you know, your first priority, your highest priority, it absolutely has to get done. These are your A's, right? And then B's are like, hey, this is important, you know, and if I get the opportunity, I'm going to do this. You know, your C's are kind of like, well, this would be nice to do, right? And like you said, your D would be your delegate.
Mm-hmm.
Can I delegate this to someone? And a good rule of thumb is,
if they can do it 70% as well as I can, then we can delegate that to someone else.
And then the all important one, this is just important and we don't often do this,
eliminate. Yeah.
You know, what things can you eliminate?
Yeah. And sometimes this isn't tasks. Sometimes this
is activities
that you've busied your family with, not only yourself, but your family. It's like, oh, my kids have to be in 5 different sports and we've got to go to all these different events and we have to be involved in all of these things at church. And sometimes we need to evaluate our life and say, you know, what is stealing our time that is not contributing to where we want to go or who we are as a person
right.
and a family. I know there's been times in our lives, especially when you were deployed, when I had a lot of activities for the kids. Part of it was just trying to keep everybody busy. But I look back and I think, how much did that actually contribute to anything that I wanted to do? It literally was time consumers. It was just taking up the time. I was going to say something about the A, B, and C. And the one important thing when you're talking about A's, the A's are things that if they're not done, they could potentially cause major problems in the future toward your goals or in your career or in your family or whatever it may be. I mean, they're top priority because without them, bad things are going to come in the future. Whereas the B's, it could affect or could not affect, but it's not imperative. It's not that kind of like where you go, ooh, if I don't do that, there's going to be bad consequences here, or there's going to be good consequences if I do. B's don't have that same weight, and C definitely doesn't. Like you said, C is the, that'd be kind of nice to do.
Right.
But it's not an A priority.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's kind of funny. We put on here for this next one, lack of organization.
Yeah.
And obviously that's something we're working on.
Yeah.
And, you know, something I always talk about that there's this term called entropy, and that is that everything always ends up falling apart.
Yeah.
And that, it's so true. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the universe or we're talking about a home, if you're talking about the organization of our office.
Mm-hmm.
Everything tends to fall apart unless you actively work to hold it together.
Right.
So, you know, that can definitely be a pitfall, a lack of organization.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you can't find the papers you're looking for, now you've wasted 5 to 10, sometimes 15 minutes of time that you could have focused attention on an A priority has now been wasted on finding that particular business card so you can get a hold of the person in order to do this task or whatever it may be. You're organized and you know where everything is. You're not going to waste time doing a task that really isn't contributing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's shift gears here real quick. But first, I want to talk about our workshops coming up. So we have this Saturday, we have Small Animal Husbandry and Processing. That's September 12th.
And, you know, with that one, we already have 8 students.
Yeah, we're going to max that one out at 12 students. So, you know, only a few more slots open.
Yeah, because we're doing, you know, there is classroom instruction, but then going out and actually doing, you know, helping people work through the different
stations. Of processing. Yeah.
And then they're going to work through all the stations with their own chicken. That's our hope anyway. I mean, if there's too many students, it might be a little difficult. But that's our goal, is to get everybody on the stations at least once and hopefully twice.
Hopefully twice. The goal is each person works each station twice, and then they can take the bird that they're going to take home, a pasture-raised chicken, through the entire process themselves.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the benefits of it, is you get to go home with a pasture-raised chicken.
Yep, absolutely. And then September 19th, Guilds and Food Forests.
Yep, Establishing Guilds and Food Forests. Yep. And that one we have a little bit more space just because...
Sure, it's a little further away than everything else, but that should be good too.
Yeah, and there's more spaces available.
Yeah.
Because we're not going through processing. It's going to be classroom instruction and then some touring and some showing and hopefully planning.
Yes, and that's going to be
students,
part of it.
Helping students plan.
Practical, hands-on, that anyone can participate, even if you only have, I don't care if you're in an apartment.
Yeah.
You can do a guild and a
pot.
A pot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's learning that process that's important.
Yeah, you can start with small guilds, or you can decide that you want to establish a food forest. And this is the opportunity to come and not only learn how to do it, but then have us sit down and actually help you.
Yeah, and both of those that we talked about, those are 4-hour workshops. So they're not intensive all day long.
But there are specialty coffees available.
All right, let's shift gears here now to the worldview segment and our... talk about different isms. And for today, it's communism. So I guess last week was socialism, and now we're on to communism. So let's start with the definition. And it's interesting here. There's a couple, and we're going to read two. So why don't you read the first one?
Okay. A theory or system of social organization based on the holding of all property in common, actual ownership being ascribed to the community as a whole or to the state.
Okay, number two, a system of social organization in which all economic and social activity is controlled by a totalitarian state, dominated by a single and self-perpetuating political party. The interesting fact about the first one you mentioned, where it kind of talks about like, hey, we're all going to hold property in common and it's based on, community ownership. In practice, that has never worked out in history. It's always been a totalitarian state run, communist.
It has agenda. To be because you can't – nobody – if given the opportunity, everybody will vote more for themselves. And if everybody's voting more for themselves, there's nobody going to vote for anyone else. So there has to be somebody in charge dictating where each thing is going to be allotted.
Right.
There has to be.
Yeah, and that's
communism ends up totalitarianism.
Yeah, that's what we end up seeing is you see a ruling class and then a large body of poverty-stricken proletariat.
Yeah, that are working for
the working class.
The
elite.
The elite.
Right. And so, I mean, obviously, it's a dead political system. Not that it's not tried, not that it's not implemented in many ways, even today, and not that it's not, there's not people trying to implement it today, even in the United States. In fact, there's a Communist Party USA that's been around since 1919. They're very active. But they even say, if you go and read their websites, they will tell you that their goal is socialism because that is the intermediate step to communism.
Right. And the thing is, when we think about communism, I know a lot of people don't really recognize communist ideology. They think of it as, I care about people. I care about the common man. Yes, the poor.
Right.
And then the elite are taking the people who are starting the businesses and making the money are somehow the evil ones. And there's a disconnect and they don't understand that it's not democracy that they're even talking about. They're talking right. about communism.
Yeah.
But they don't know it. It's like it's a secret or right. something.
And so what we're going to do, instead of, going through a history lesson on Marx or Lenin or that kind of thing, I think what's helpful is it's really interesting. If nobody has read The Naked Communist, that's a great book to read on this topic. And what was famous or what kind of came out of that book was the 63, or I don't remember if it was 63 or not, the whatever, however many stated, 45 stated goals of communism.
Now, we have to be clear, it's kind of like they went through and really pulled out. It's kind of like they searched through and pulled out all the goals that were talked about. The communists didn't have a list.
Right.
But they brought out their agenda.
Yes.
And wrote it out. And then all of these.
They derived it from their principles, from right. their methodology and all that. And, of course, the Communist Party USA is going to deny a lot of this. But it is clear, and you just think about it for a minute, and we're going to read some of these, not all of these, because I'm not going to read 45. We're going to read, a handful, maybe a dozen. And what's interesting about this is this was put into the congressional record in 1963. Okay, so everything that we're reading to you was put into congressional record in 1963 based on the research done through this book, The Naked Communist. So let's just start, just grab a few of these, and we'll just kind of work our way through some of these and talk about them briefly. So it's one of their stated goals was to promote the UN. And in fact, they would probably openly do this today. As the only hope for mankind is, again, we get into this kind of new world order, this,
one world government,
globalist government. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was one thing that they wanted to continually promote. Number 17, get control of the schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism. Again, intermediate step to communism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum, get control of
teachers' associations put the party line in textbooks. Folks, that this has been done. Hook, line, and sinker. Okay, let's see. Infiltrate the press. Get control of book review assignments, editorial writing, policy-making positions. That's really clear. The media is overwhelmingly progressive, if you want to call it that. Continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. What was it? Okay, yeah. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings, substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms.
And we see that. We don't see good, okay, another one, because this ties into this. Control art critics and directors of art museum. Our plan is to promote ugliness, repulsive, meaningless art. And we see that today. You go into art museums and you can look, there still is beautiful art that is older, and you can see the beauty, the representation of man as being made in the image of God. And today, the artists are coming out with
things like Piss Christ.
Yeah.
With his, a crucifix dipped in urine, or, you know, the
toilet
bowl on the wall.
Yeah.
Or just a plain color.
Black. I mean, it's bizarre. Yeah. The art that comes out today, I don't even consider art. Some of it's just offensive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know what? They've done it. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and television. And have we television today, the stuff that you see would never have even been on a movie screen, yeah, well, rated R in 70s.
Yeah, like, I mean, what, mainstream book, movie,
yeah.
Was it 40 Shades of Grey?
Well, yeah, okay. Whatever, 50 Shades of Grey?
I'm sorry. 50 Shades of Grey.
I think it's 50 Shades of Grey.
Whatever. And here's another one. Let's see. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Have you heard that before? Infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion, in other words, the Word of God, with social religion. And boy, do we see that.
Yeah.
Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious, quote-unquote, religious crutch.
And, you know, the thing is, with churches today, sadly, there's fewer and fewer churches that are truly based on the Word of God and preaching the truth, but rather
social justice.
Yeah, social justice and loving others and accepting and not judging.
Right.
That's really what you hear from even a lot of Christians.
Right, and that's obviously taken much out of context.
Yep.
So eliminate prayer and any phase of religious expression in the schools on the ground that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. So that's obviously been fully implemented, except if you're talking about Islam. Discredit the American Founding Fathers.
Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, a hindrance to cooperation between nations on a worldwide basis. And one of the things I've seen in the last couple of years, and particularly with the advent of Common Core, and not that that was the beginning of all of this, because it wasn't. This is sort of the culmination of many years of work. But one of the things they're doing is bringing out small portions of the Constitution for students and saying, now, how would you rewrite this? What is a better way to do this to create more equality? And literally having them tear apart these founding documents of our country, but not giving it in any context, but telling the kids, hey, this is old fashioned. And how can we update this? And how can we make this more equal for all people?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, just a couple more. Let's see. Discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. That is true.
Yep.
Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and retarding of children to suppressive influence of parents. Wow. I mean, you know, if you can't see that a lot of these, most of these have, you know, and again, this was written and put into record in 1963. Many people would have read this in 1963 and laughed and said, no way.
Yeah.
No way.
You know,
there's
so
a church
these
on every corner of every block.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that this is ever going to happen. And look where we are today.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the reasons why homeschooling, even amongst people that say, oh, yeah, I'm open to the idea of homeschooling, but what about socialization? You know, they're only getting your point of view. They're seeing a very narrow view of the world and view of religions and everything else. What are you doing to expand their horizons and not just teach them what you believe and teach them what you think is right? Well, the whole point of having children is so that, yeah, we can teach them the truth of Scripture and we can teach them about salvation and not have them fall under the state's guidance of what the state says is right and wrong and moral and just.
Right, yeah. And obviously these are really important factors. And obviously when we look at, the naked communists, we look at the current agenda, it was prophetic in its time. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Well, I guess one of the things here is what Christians need to do. You need to be aware that these things are in our society.
The agenda is out there everywhere.
Yeah, and not to fall into it and say, well, yeah, Jesus said to love, and I'm not saying we shouldn't love.
Of course.
But we have to take the whole truth of Scripture and not just small portions of it and then use that to drive an agenda. And that's what we see today. It's not the whole truth of Scripture. It's just little pieces that I like, and the rest of it I'm deleting, and I'm going to leave out. Jesus was love, and forget about him coming on a horse and coming with power and judgment. He's that too. So as Christians, it's our responsibility to make sure that we're not allowing that to infiltrate our own homes through media or through public education with our children. We're teaching truth and we're reading things, we're watching things with discernment.
Yep. Speak truth. Okay, let's shift gears to our main topic for today, which is composting. And, obviously we had to do quite a bit of research here because we're certainly not experts in composting, but we can see all of the benefits from composting. We obviously mm-hmm. do that here. And it's just another element on the homestead that you must integrate with all the other elements. I mean, we're trying to get a synergistic effect. It's not off on its own. It's something to be integrated with. And so many benefits to composting. And we're going to talk about some of those, and we're going to talk about some basics of composting. We'll talk about how we do it and, maybe some better ways. I don't know, but a lot of that is based on what you're trying to do, how much time you want to put into it. I mean, you can turn this into a science project big time.
Yeah.
And there's many people out there that have done that, and they're truly experts in this area of composting. And there's all kinds of fascinating things you can do with composting. Some people will heat their hot water with composting. And all of that.
Well, yeah, it could be a really good homeschool project.
Yeah, well, yeah, it could. It really could. We start talking about nitrogen to carbon ratios and getting the right mixtures and obtaining the right heat.
Yeah, you could do a science project on this, like one that you're just leaving alone and you're just throwing in whatever, and the other one you've got all the right stuff and you're doing the turning and,
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be kind of cool.
One of the main benefits of composting is that you get all this rich humus for your lawn, your garden.
Yeah.
Mostly our gardens, our orchards.
Right.
Our food forests, all of these things. I mean, I don't think we could create enough compost here.
Well, and the thing is, it also decreases the trash.
The waste, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that drove us to this.
Yeah, we're using it for something beneficial. We're not just...
Right. We take the quote-unquote waste and we're turning it into a resource.
Right.
Right. So, obviously then, we've talked about this a little bit before, but we recycle our kitchen waste and any scraps that we may get from the gardens or whatever. If they don't go to first and foremost, though, they'll go right back to the animals.
Yes. Most of our kitchen waste does. And we have a smaller compost container for our actual compost bin. The other larger bucket is anything that the animals can eat, and we're bringing it out to the chickens and the goats and pigs.
Right, right. So we have kitchen waste, but again, that's broken up, and we will immediately use that in its most beneficial form is for food.
Yeah.
For the animals, and if not for that, then into the compost pile it goes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our animal waste, our manures and things like that. We try to spread load that nutrient on our land so we don't have to collect it.
Right.
And I hear about it all the time. You know, people are shoveling, you know, hundreds of pounds of their, you know, their horse and their cow manures, and they're, you know, of course they're building it into piles, and that's great. That's fine. I'd rather it just go straight into providing nutrients for the soil and the land itself.
Right.
But there are some cases where that'll concentrate. And, you know, that might be things like, you know, in winter time. So we've talked about overwintering animals using deep bedding. And that is a method of composting in and of itself. The basis for composting is this carbon-nitrogen cycle, or this mixture. And that's what allows compost to work. That's what allows all the microbes to work, and it gives them the protein, and it gives them the energy they need to turn that material into beneficial humus, you know, for the gardens, if you want to think of it like that. So let's can start with going through like what things would fall into the nitrogen category, what things would fall into the carbon category. And a couple of good rules of thumb, if you will, about composting and about the carbon to nitrogen ratios is that browns are high carbon and greens are high nitrogen. But what you're really shooting for, if you want to get a little bit more precise, is you want a ratio of carbon to nitrogen to be about 30 to 1, maybe 25 to 30 to 1. And so if we think of it in those terms, it'll make more sense when we talk about, you know, what things are considered high carbon and what things are considered high nitrogen. Because when you look at those ratios, it's easy to get confused. When you see, for example, you see a ratio of 12 to 1 carbon to nitrogen, you know, for alfalfa. So alfalfa has a carbon to nitrogen ratio of 12 to 1. You're like, think, well, that has a lot of carbon. No, anything below 25 to 30 to 1 is considered high nitrogen. Okay, and some other examples would be wood ash. Wood ash is 25 to 1. So guess what? Wood ash actually will compost on its own. It has its own ratio that's pretty close.
Yeah.
You know.
That's going to compost well because it's at its own, it's at the perfect ratio that we're looking for.
Right. Now, you know, you know the diversity of elements is always good because it, you know, it creates that humus that has lots of different minerals and nutrients,
right,
to be able to provide back to the soil.
So like we put a lot of coffee grounds in ours, but that's a 20 to 1. That's not too bad. And we mix it in with some straw.
Right. So you'd only need to add a little bit of carbon in this case to balance that out. You know, some other examples. What are some other examples here?
Well, maybe the shredded cardboard.
Okay.
Huh. That's 350 to 1.
Right, so it's very high in carbon. And you could think of the same thing like sawdust or, let's see, what else is a really high?
You know, pine newspaper. Needles are high, but they're not as high.
Right, so newspaper, shredded cardboard, sawdust. If we just think about that for a minute, they're really dry. They're very, you know, almost processed. And so they're going to have this really high carbon content.
But you know what's interesting is most of the time that we're using those products, shredded newspaper or sawdust, it's generally to hold manure. Like we're using it in a brooder where the chickens are going all over the sawdust, and manure is high nitrogen.
Right.
So it's actually helping to balance out the carbon that's in the wood chips.
Yeah, absolutely.
And would make a much better...
And that goes, I mean, what you're getting at is a really key point there. And a lot of times when we talk about, you know, animals and running animals on homesteads, and people are like, well, I don't want to have pigs because they stink. Well, if your animals stink, what has gotten knocked out of whack is the carbon to nitrogen ratio.
Right.
Period. I don't care if it's inside of a chicken coop, inside of a barn, on a pasture, whatever. The carbon to nitrogen ratio has been knocked out of whack. So in the brooder, like you said, we have lots of sawdust in there and, you know, or wood chips or whatever we're running at the time. And, you know, a bunch of chicks are in there pooping, but it doesn't smell.
Right.
It doesn't smell because there's, you know, that carbon, it's got high carbon, and therefore it's able to kind of soak up the nitrogen.
Yep.
And, you know, soak up the urine, the poop, and all that, and it does not stink. And it's interesting when you look at compost piles, if you have a really smelly, stinky compost pile, it has excess nitrogen. So what do?
Throw on some wood chips or shredded newspaper.
You add carbon, and guess what? It won't smell anymore. And you'll get it probably closer to being back in whack. So another good rule of thumb for composting is if you have too much carbon, it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
It's not going to heat up.
Because it's not going to be breaking down at the same rate.
At the same rate. It'll take a long time. Now, you could pile up a giant pile of wood chips or sawdust, and eventually it would compost.
Mm-hmm.
It would take a long time. On the flip side, if you have a compost pile that is, like I said, stinky or whatever else, then it's too high in nitrogen, just like we said. So those are your kind of extremes, and what you're shooting to do or what you're looking to do is balance that out. That would be the ideal, and that's the fastest way to create that compost, that good compost for gardens.
Right, and then the other thing that a compost pile needs is moisture.
Yes.
And most of, like, for us, moisture is generally provided by rain.
Rain.
Or although it's been really dry lately.
Yeah, if we have to, we'll...
Water it.
Right.
You can water it.
And then there's also the you don't want to overwater.
Right.
So you do want to cover your compost piles. If you're in an area with a lot of rain,
mm-hmm.
you would just become a soggy, wet mess.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to stink. And you're going to attract rodents and bugs.
Right. So you'd want to cover it either with plastic or if you have a tumbler. We don't use a tumbler because we have so much going in. But if you're in an apartment or you're in a small house, you can be using tumblers if you want to on your back deck or whatever.
Sure.
But for us, we've got a six-bin compost system.
Yeah, a big six-bin system. We talked about it last time. So we have our scrap, our food, our animal waste and composting. Again, when we process animals, we use as much of that as possible. Anything that's left over, we compost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people won't do that. And they'll say, no, you can't compost this or that. Well, no, you can. Everything composts. Except for maybe some man-made materials that there's too long of a timeline to talk about that as composting. But, you know, if possible, you want to use that in other ways. So
mm-hmm.
whether it's feeding dogs or feeding chickens
eggs,
whatever that, you know, that would be the first thing. But anything left over, absolutely you can compost. You've got to give enough time. You got to have this ratio correct. And again, we talked about this as an art and a science, and you could turn it into a science experiment. That's not really what we do.
No.
We try and balance it out by guessing, right? But it's a little bit better than guessing because we understand what's carbon and what's nitrogen, and we kind of understand how to mix those together. But again, we don't do the precision thing.
We don't. And you know, the other thing that they would recommend, because you want to make sure there's enough air in there, is a lot of people would recommend turning. We don't turn either.
Right.
But we do use straw, which allows for
aeration
and air movement throughout the different layers of our compost pile.
Yeah. So you know, that's a good point there. And if you're looking for the fastest way to get good compost for gardens and food forests or whatever, then getting as precise as possible and turning at the right amount will get you there.
Yeah.
In fact, there is a, I think there's something out there, and I've never tried it because I don't have any desire to. I think it's called like the 18-day or the 21-day compost, and you can look that up, where they're turning it like every day or every other day or something like that to try and speed that process up.
One of the things that we try to do here at our permafarm is to decrease the input that's required with still a good output. So our compost...
Minimize the input, maximize the output.
Yeah. Our compost piles are going to give us soil. And they're right now the chickens are out there and they're working it because there's probably a bunch of worms working in there. And The chickens are loving it. Maybe they're kind of aerating.
Well, they are. And there's no doubt about it. Well, it's kind of a balance there, because what they're going after are the bugs and
things
the
that
organisms
break everything down.
That are breaking it down. So it's this kind of balancing act, and we're okay with that. I'm okay with the chickens scratching through there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're actually turning it for us a little bit. But they're going after some of these beneficial organisms. They're going after the earthworms that are in there and all that kind of stuff that aerate and break down that compost. But that's okay with me. To me, those are elements working together, and I don't see that as contradictory at all.
Yeah, so for us, compost is eventually going to give us stuff without us having to do too much work or too much measuring or, you know, daily going out and aerating and making sure the water is correct. But there are some people, like you were saying, that would like a quicker turnaround. They want to have soil as quickly as possible, or maybe they enjoy the science of the whole thing.
Sure, yeah, that's great. If that's what people enjoy, they should knock it out. In fact, tell us how that's going for you.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about that.
Because if it's something, we may come to a point where we're like, okay, let's figure out ways to do this, and maybe we're going to do it with animals. And that is, in fact, one way you could run chickens. You know, for the person who wants to run chickens in a coop and run style arrangement, due to whatever reason, it might be high predation or space or something like that. Guess what? Turn those chickens into a composting pile. Dump everything in there. I'm not talking about just your food scraps. I'm talking about your neighbor's leaves and everything else, and let them go to town for you.
Yeah, because they really do. They'll just dig right through that and turn it into dirt.
Yep.
Well, we do have another compost pile in our small pasture that it's turning into soil over there.
Yes, it is, definitely.
The chickens have done a really great job.
Hummus that's filled with earthworms and everything else. Yeah, absolutely.
Lots of rabbit manure and chicken manure, and that's some good stuff.
It is good stuff. Okay, so let's talk about kind of how one would go about doing this. First of all, we recommend that you whatever you're going to compost, that you start your pile, whether it's a pallet compost bin or whatever, that you start it on bare earth.
Yeah.
Bare earth is the way to go. A lot of people say, no, you got to put pallets down and this and that. No, you want the earthworms and everything else and all the other beneficial organisms to be able to reach it from underneath.
Right.
So we definitely recommend, and ours are all on, that we're started on bare earth.
Yeah, and if you have really hard ground and maybe the earthworms wouldn't be able to get up right there, maybe you're choosing an area that you aren't growing anything on because of that, maybe take a pitchfork or take something and sort of aerate the ground before you start your compost.
Yeah, that'd be good. Next, you want to lay down a few inches of carbon. Okay, so we're going to start with carbon. And we recommend something that's going to help aerate the area. Again, get some airflow in there, so straw or, like we said, the sawdust or the wood chips or the shredded newspaper, mm-hmm. something like that. That's going to kind of be a first layer of carbon and aeration. Even like some, it's hard to compost like brush or woody material. But for that bottom layer, that would actually work out really well.
Right.
And then as you can do it one of two ways. If you have just this huge pile and you're literally making a giant compost pile as opposed to adding to it all the time, you want to go in layers. So again, you're not going to throw all your nitrogen in the middle and then surround it. You want to go in layers. Mm-hmm. So carbon, nitrogen, and so on. Again, this is different than adding to a pile every day, like a daily add or whatever, or weekly. If you want to do it that way, that would be fine. You want to look to, a lot of people will tell you that you cannot compost things like meat or whatever. I think you can. You absolutely can. It will compost. Most people will recommend against that because it attracts rodents or something like that. Again, get those ratios right. You can do it. But another, something better maybe to do with that meat would be to give it back to the chickens or the pigs or something like that if you have scraps.
Mm-hmm.
So again, alternating those things. Food scraps, it doesn't matter really what it is. So and then you can go, if you have, and use what you have available.
If you have a lot of straw available, use it. If you had a lot of leaves available, use it. Mm-hmm. Wood ash from your
fireplace wood stove. Or wood stove.
Yep. Use it. Add manures if you've got them. And not only just, animal manures, what we call green manure as well. Grass clippings, like when any of these types of high nitrogen sources are considered quote unquote green manure. So again, you're layering those things, carbon, nitrogen, just like that. And it's really easy to get lists of what is carbon and nitrogen online. And then you want to,
keep the compost moist.
Yes, that's right.
So again, we talked about this. You could water if you need to, especially on dry portions. But if it's raining, then not too much.
Right.
But if you're getting rain at a decent rate, then just let that do the work
for
you. Sure,
yeah. And you could do that. And you could say, okay, you just have something that will be like a temporary cover.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're getting many days of rain in a row, like after day one, maybe you're going to throw that cover over there.
Yeah. And even if it's now, if you've gotten some rain, but you're expecting some dry, cover it anyway, because it's going to help the moisture stay in and not evaporate out, and keeps the heat in as well.
Yeah.
Which is what you need. You're wanting heat to, moisture and heat to go in there so that it can start breaking all that stuff down.
Right. And it's really cool if you can get to a point where you've got that steaming pile.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just awesome. And like I said, people are successfully getting hot water from compost piles. That takes a little extra work there, and they're using that black poly tubing all the way through it, and they're building these pretty big piles. And you've got to kind of at one time build your compost pile, let's say it's with wood chips and manure, animal manures and wood chips. You build this pile. You're layering the poly tubing all the way through it, and that'll last for several months. They'll get hot water for several months. It's amazing. And that's just, it's really quite a unique way of getting hot water. I mean, for the winter time, maybe you're living in a climate where you don't get a lot of solar aspect, and so solar hot water is just not a factor in the winter like it is for us.
Mm-hmm.
But hot composting, maybe that's your way of getting hot water in the winter time. And I've seen it done. And so, like you said, we want to keep that pile moist. Even if, as you go along, let's talk about this real quick. For us, we have one active compost pile.
Right.
And then once it gets full, it sits. Mm-hmm. It's set it and forget it for a period of time. And then when it's time to break it open, then we'll use it.
Mm-hmm.
But we add to ours daily, the scraps of the day. But we have next to it, we have our just a giant bin filled with carbon,
right?
Which is for us, it's like straw or even old hay sometimes. That's had kind of the weed seeds and everything else eaten through it, and it's just kind of the scraps that are left over. So as we add to it, we always add a little carbon on top.
So. Yeah. Now, if you're trying to do the ideal compost pile, once you have it established and you're going to be adding new things, technically, I think they want you to stir that in rather than layer it on top once you have an established compost pile. Because now that it's established and it's starting to break down, you don't want to pile the new stuff in. Just kind of stir it in, and again, that aerates and everything. But we don't.
We kind of go by the no-turn, low
maintenance,
low work model.
We do. And this may be something that we experiment with next year, as we aren't doing quite so much additions and projects. But
yeah. And what that means for us is that our compost piles will probably have to sit longer.
Right.
And that's okay.
And we're okay with that.
And then we'll start on the next one. That's why mm-hmm. we built six bins.
Right.
That it's okay for our piles to sit for a year.
Yep.
We have no issue with that.
Right.
So keeping it moist, covering it as necessary. Turning it if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we don't. And again, the keys here is getting that carbon to nitrogen ratio close.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even say correct, because I have no idea how close we are. I know we add both carbon and nitrogen, so high carbon and high nitrogen, and those hopefully levels that are close.
Well, definitely when you walk past the compost bin, you can't smell anything. You
can't smell it. So we're, you know, we're at least not getting too high in nitrogen.
Right.
So the key is, you know, do we have enough nitrogen? There's so many benefits to this. You know, when we look at trying to remineralize soils and things like that, compost is key to that. And there are many other aspects of composting. We definitely recommend that you experiment with this. This is a great thing to do, even if you don't have animals or anything else. Practice, you know, do it even on a micro scale for composting.
Yeah, because everybody has kitchen scraps no matter what. And it's better to compost it, even if you're giving someone else the soil or you're deciding to do just planters on your deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so anyone and everyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good for, well, all the reasons we've been talking about. So there's some ways that you can kind of kickstart your compost, and that's by essentially just using good materials. Like we grow a lot of comfrey here because it's what we consider to be a green manure and a dynamic accumulator. Mostly we chop and drop that. So we drop it in around the plants, and so it's composting, if you will, in and amongst the trees and the plants. But if we had any excess, we could add that to our compost piles. It would be a good kind of kickstarter, you know, the grass, the fresh, moist grass clippings for those that have yards to mow, would be a good kickstarter. And those kinds of things. And they will also not only help get that started, but they're going to turn back into to good stuff for those, the same areas. Discouraging rodents and flies and bugs.
Well, I don't know. We haven't really had a fly issue. It may be that the smell isn't really there, and it could partly be because we've got chickens that are in there. Maybe they're eating the larvae. I don't know. I don't see an unnatural amount of flies around our compost.
I don't either. And again, I think that and the whole unpleasant odors and all that kind of stuff is related to the ratio.
Yeah.
So again, we're not making that mistake. We're not too high on nitrogen.
Right.
And that makes sense because we have a lot of straw and we have a lot of excess material like that.
Yeah.
But if you do have, again, those odors, or if you have lots of flies or things like, add more carbon.
Yeah.
That's the simple answer.
Yeah, we got to fix that ratio.
If you have a compost pile that's steaming and, you know, it's like really hot, well, congratulations.
Yeah.
That's great. And all that means is there's lots of microbial activity going on there. They're working hard and breaking that stuff down. Which is exactly what you want. If you have a soggy pile, it's a common problem, usually in winter. It goes back to, you need to add more carbon. So, you know, a lot of your problems can go back to adding carbon.
Yeah, because the ones that are high in nitrogen tend to be soggier, wetter, and hold moisture more, because you're talking about food scraps and things like that.
Right. If you're having problems with, like I said, if we have, you know, small, if you have animal problems, things like that, you know, that gets into some other issues. But again, I think having the chickens kind of work the piles, having the dogs around, it's keeping things like raccoons away or rodents.
Or anything, that would...
I mean, our chickens are rodent hunters as well, but...
Our compost bins, we do have the front is completely covered.
Yeah, and so we built... again, our compost piles were built with poles and scrap wood that for free, essentially, besides the screws. And we built into our bins, we can add basically layers of frontage. So as we build the pile up, we add more boards.
Board to make the wall higher in the front.
And when you build your compost bins, build them with some gaps, again, for aeration.
Air.
You know, the tightly enclosed garbage can filled with compost is just going to end up being a stinky mess, most likely.
Oh, yeah, that was a failed experiment in Okinawa.
Yes, it was. Big time.
That just made for a heavy, soggy disaster. So,
yeah, absolutely. So we, I think we covered about everything there is to cover, at least through our knowledge of composting.
Yeah, and there's lots of articles out there, and there's many books dedicated. Even scientific papers, if you want to get that in depth.
You can go get yourself some peer-reviewed journal articles, scholarly types.
Yes.
If you want to be bored to death.
Or if you're really interested in that. There might be people interested in it.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, there's actually some good stuff out there if you want to get a little bit more scientific about it. But we recommend that everyone compost.
Yeah, start a compost. Our scripture for today is Romans 8, 38 and 39. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord.
This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We would appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.